I have never had, like, a female role model who was in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So having her as my current boss plus another lady there, I'm, like, looking at them all, like, starry-eyed or something. I'm just like, holy cow, like, these people are forces to be reckoned with.
Uh-huh.
Like, I've never seen that in the wild, in action, going down, just making things and making it beautiful and getting it done. Learning from that, to me, is probably more important than anything right now. So it's like learning how to maintain yourself as a woman professionally in anything.
Listening to the Ink and Paint Girls podcast, where we celebrate women working in animation, illustration, and comics. In an effort to share their stories, we not only cover the steps they have taken to get to their dream jobs, but also the struggles. We highlight artists, writers, and producers. We explore the ups and downs of working in the industry and discuss female representation behind the scenes and on the screen. Sherry DeLorme is a character designer, illustrator, and fine artist who has worked in animation, gaming, toys, has had work showcased in countless gallery events, and even finds time to mentor through the Women in Animation Mentorship Program. Footnote, at the time of this recording, Sherry was a senior designer at Jack's Pacific Toys, designing for the Disney brands. She's currently working freelance until she finds her next in-house adventure. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's a delight to have you, Sherry.
Thank you, Cassie. It's nice to be here.
Can you give us a brief introduction to you and what you do?
My name is Sherry DeLorme. I'm a senior toy designer at Jack's Pacifics. I work under the Disney branch, so I oversee the creation and development of fashion dolls and toys.
That's awesome.
It's pretty cool, yeah.
And some have already come out, too.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I did the Disney fairies that have come out last spring, and was a senior designer for the Disney Star Darlings.
Oh, nice.
Super cute. Yeah.
Those are super cute dolls.
Yeah.
So you're basically at the end of, like, characters being made and then taking them and making them tangible items for kids to take home and love.
Yeah, definitely. It's super cool. It's, like, Disney approaches us with, okay, we want these certain items. So my job is to actually come up with concepts, and then we pitch them to Disney, and then from there, it depends on what we want to do for the season. We take those and we take them into product design, which is super cool. It's cool to me because I'm still learning it, so
yeah.
There's goods and bads.
Yeah. So. Did you think that, when you were a little kid, did you think that you'd be making the toys that future kids would be playing with?
The thing about it is, like, you know, I started out in animation. I got my degree at the Academy of Art University back in 2005 for animation, character animation in 2D. I think it's kind of cool that it still plays a part in it. Toys is still, like, definitely a part of animation. So it really, actually really is. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about when I was a kid and the different things that I was inspired by, you know, it was like I was an 80s kid, so you had, like, your Care Bears and your Popples and, you know, Ninja Turtles and Barbie, you know. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that, you played with those items. But I never really connected the two, that it was actually, like, those Saturday morning cartoons that, you know, inspired you, but plus your toys. So it kind of went hand in hand. But I never really connected that until maybe 5 years ago, that was something else that you can do.
Mm-hmm. So, like, when was the moment that you realized you wanted to work in a storytelling medium, animation, or be a character designer?
I think I'm, you know, it's like anybody else. I was like, really young. I was living in Wyoming. And I was like, we were lucky enough to have, like, the Disney Channel and, like, the early Nickelodeon, Nick at Night, and, like, all those. And I think I was watching, like, The Art of Sleeping Beauty. You know, it was like it came on.
Mm-hmm.
And just watching them painting and watching, you know, how they had the live action actress dancing and singing, and then we had the hand drawing right beside it, and I was just like, that's what I want to do, you know, I want to do that. It spoke so much to me as a child that I didn't really know, you know, what else would be as great. I mean, I came from, like, the Northwest, so there's not a lot of opportunity for creativity there, but I think it was, like, being inspired by the old Disney Channel and seeing what kind of imagination can come out of just a drawing. I just wanted to be so much a part of that and just create something and make an impact and make another child happy. That was definitely my motivation. Mm-hmm. And so I just became like a nerdy art girl.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. I didn't get to see the art of making Sleeping Beauty until much later on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty amazing stuff. Yeah. I love seeing Ivan Earl do his humongous paintings from black. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Yeah, it was just, as a child, you're just like, magic. And then, you know, you see the Lion King come out, or, you know, the Little Mermaid. And it was just like, I know what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And then also you saw Jurassic Park, which, you know, everybody was like,
yeah,
you know, just so inspired by it. Just movie magic and just creating magic and just being able to share that in a family home is just, I don't know. It was really neat. Yeah. Yeah, just have to be a part of it. Have to be a part of that magic. So
you said that you're from Wyoming. Mm-hmm. So, like, what were the steps in getting from Wyoming to where you are now?
My parents were really supportive of what I wanted to do. They helped me get, like, private art classes. They just were completely encouraging of me to pursue art. I don't think that they really knew that animation was like a plausible job that you could get, you know, but they did support me in the arts. And so I just tried to participate in as many little contests as I could, and got support from my high school teachers, and went on to junior college there and pursued my degree in art there, just mm-hmm. illustration.
Yeah.
And then I think my second year in college there, I ended up applying for the Academy of Art University. They had a scholarship program at the time. And so I ended up getting a scholarship for a semester there, free.
That's
so they
amazing.
They paid for my housing and they paid for my all my classes. So I think I was like 19 and packed up my stuff. I think I was actually I worked through the year and I scrapped up like $600 to take with myself, you know, packed up my little bag and I flew off to San Francisco, where I had a aunt who met me there, an extended family. So she met me there and helped me get settled in. I think through that, like, I think it was like an 8-week course, I just fell in love with the city. It was like everything, you know, it was like, mm-hmm. you felt like this awkward child, you know, you were like, you grew up in the middle of nowhere and you had all this huge imagination and these fantastical ideas, and you didn't have anybody else to share that with. So you always felt kind of like odd. I don't know, kind of different.
Yeah.
And so when I got to San Francisco and I got into the dorm, like, everybody was like me. I was like this little duckling, you know, this little ugly duckling or whatever. And you go in and you meet all these other little ducklings that are just like you. And then you felt like you had found where you're supposed to be. And I think that was like, that kind of set it in stone though. I was like, okay, I'm on the right path. I'm just going to keep going. Decided I wanted to do 2D animation at the time. And so I pursued, I think I stayed there. It was a 4-year program. I ended up staying for 5 years. And because I had to work part-time, you know.
Right.
So I studied 2D animation and 2D character design, and I was going into 3D animation because at the time it was like teachers from Pixar to come in and start teaching people 3D. Mm-hmm. So this was like, this is like in 2003. This is a while ago.
Yeah.
I decided, like, my third year in college that I should probably start learning 3D because that's where the trend was going. And then I realized I didn't want to be a 3D animator. So it was that. I think that was really hard because 2D, you know, you were learning, you were chasing that dream, and you were all you saw was just, you can be blindsided by your dream, and you can't, sometimes you don't really see the end course of, like, the reality of the situation, the job market. I mean, you're only 22 years old. You're not thinking about the job market or stability and what you're going to have, your lifestyle that you're going to have, you know. The school is selling you an idea that follow your dreams and we'll help you find a job placement and, you know, all this. And my senior year, I didn't get that, you know. It got kind of hard.
I felt the same way senior year and through college, actually.
Yeah.
If you don't study 3D, they said, you won't be, like, if you want to eat and have a roof over your head, do 3D.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting because the pendulum has, you know, swung again, and it's mostly 2D now.
Yeah.
In TV, at least.
Right. Yeah. I think that was, like, super discouraging because I had pursued heavy 2D character animation, and actually, you know, there had, like, the special classes at the time where you had the Pixar teachers, and if you were good enough, you can get into these classes. And I got into these classes, and granted, at that time, there was only one other girl in there. So, you know, a majority of everybody in for my class were a bunch of guys. I was doing these Pixar classes, and I was the only girl doing 2D animation. So, and everybody else was learning 3D, and I was still like a stickler, like believing that it all, if I stay the course, finished the classes and graduated college. When I went to school, from 2000 to 2005. Like, there was a majority of my classes were a bunch of guys.
Right.
So, but the thing about it was that they were like I was raised around boys, so it mm-hmm. was fine. I was I was fine with it because I'm kind of like a guy's girl. I grew up around boys, rough and tumble, and so I didn't have a problem with it. But I did see a lot of girls struggle with that. In a majority of our classes, there wasn't too many girls studying. There was, like, maybe, you know, out of 20 of us, there was, like, maybe 8.
Like, I don't even think that really anyone thinks about those things when you're just, like, going after a dream.
Yeah.
Like, and then you get to see it, and you're like, oh, yeah, I was only taught about the 9 old men in school, you know?
I think I was so in love with the idea of pursuing animation that I didn't really think about those barriers, which I'm glad I didn't, because that probably would have skewed my perspective on things.
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate enough to be friends with a lot of my classmates that were, you know, a bunch of silly boys, and I still love them to death, and they're all doing great, and, mm-hmm. you know. But I did find that there wasn't that many females in there. Yeah, I think in hindsight, there wasn't that many. We only had maybe 2 or 3 female teachers, too, at the time. The majority of them were men. Again, I'm still young, and I didn't see the difference. Like, I was just there to learn.
Totally.
I was a sponge. I was just trying to take everything. It was just having an adventure, you know. You're just mm-hmm. living and learning, soaking up the world.
Yeah,
know?
And it's good not to focus on those things anyways, because it's easy to be a victim, like, if you don't get a job, and be like, oh, it must be because I'm a woman. Like, it's not about that. It's just about, you know, now it's just about encouraging more women to...
Right, right.
I think, step up and try to get those higher positions more so, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because going to school, a majority of my teachers, you know, like I said, that they were like the Pixar guys, you know, like Rob Gibbs or, you know, Stephen Gregory. Or those guys are really great. Great mentors, too. I think the funny thing is, like, my graduation picture, you should see. It's like me, this little girl, and then just all these guys. It's like, and that's my graduation picture, and it kind of sums up my experience. You know, it was like,
mm-hmm.
maybe I'm naive, I don't know, but I had a good experience with school. I had a great experience with my teachers. The only thing is, like, right after I graduated, I was like, all right, world, I'm ready to go and show what I have, you know, and, mm-hmm. I think what happened, like, almost in line with graduating in 2005 or somewhere around there was Walt Disney Feature Animation in Florida shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So that 2D, you know.
Right.
That was kind of like the nail in the coffin for a lot of us who came out of and graduated with a degree in 2D animation, so.
So, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, degree in hand. Another 2D department shut down. Where were you at mentally and emotionally? Like, what was your plan?
Well, I knew that I didn't want to do 3D. I mean, I figured I would just go ahead and go into visual development. So right after college, I went right back to college. And then I went back to school right after I had my degree, but I started studying the next fall. And so I started taking the advanced visual development courses through mid-semester. This is where, like, you know, life takes a turn and hands it to you. I had to move home, so I had to move back to Wyoming. There was a decision, you know, family members get sick and you have to make that decision whether or not, mm-hmm. you know. And I think as a woman, maybe it's emotional, logical, I just felt like the best thing for me to do was to go home at the time. But in my mind, my 23-year-old mind, I was like, I'm just going to go home for 6 months. That's it. You know, take care of things, make sure everything's okay, make sure I'm okay, you know, and then I'll be right back and right as rain, and I'll start up again the next semester. That didn't happen. I ended up living back in Wyoming for the next 2.5 years after that. Yeah, so I ended up getting a job at a startup company and doing their management for advertising. They were a casino, but they were just getting off the ground. So I got to actually spearhead advertising. And so at the time, it was like, it was really hard because it wasn't what I wanted to do at all. It mm-hmm. was not what I wanted to do. I did not feel like I fit in with the people. I had to come back. I was not happy, but I made mm-hmm. the best of it.
Yeah. And I mean, that was a management position, right? So it wasn't necessarily artistic, kind of creative.
Yeah, it was. Well, it was creative because of the fact that it merged actually into director of marketing. So, like, after 2 years and worked mm-hmm. my way up, I got it. In hindsight, it was a good thing, but you never think that at the time. I got to learn how to market myself as an artist because you're learning to market a company, you're learning advertising, you're learning. Branding, which is super important, mm-hmm. and everybody should learn how to brand themselves as an artist. Just marketing as a whole, how to play to your core audience, or the, you know, how to draw people in, how to entice them with whatever it is you have to offer. Mm-hmm. So I think, in hindsight, it was a better experience than I had taken it at the time. But
that's good.
Yeah,
I feel like you're thrown things in life that will ultimately be good later, you know, if it's not good at the time.
You know, we always think that we're going to get what we want, but life usually is like, no, you got to have these other challenges first before you're ready. Mm-hmm. I really do believe that. So,
okay. So you're back in Wyoming, working a job you don't necessarily want. I mean, did you feel like you would still go, like, try to come back and, like, work in animation?
Yeah.
Like, so, like, what steps did you take to make that happen?
That's a good question. I was still struggling with the idea that I was going to make it back. And I didn't know what to do because I only got to halfway learn visual development. So I decided to just enroll in Animation Mentor and try to just force my way into being in 3D because that's where the jobs were at the time. Mm-hmm. So I was doing 9-to-5 or 8-to-5 business management by day and pursuing animation school, 3D animation this time at night.
Oh, wow.
And so I was, like, being all hardcore and burning myself to, you know, burning the hell out of myself, basically. And I got into my second semester, and I just realized this is not for me. It wasn't for me at all. I'm not a 3D animator. I cannot sit in a dark room and try to make something come to life. There's nothing I can control. You know, you're an artist and you're very physical. You're very, you know, you need to touch paper. You need to feel. You need to draw. And sitting there clicking and messing with a rig when it breaks, you just want to. It's just torture. I didn't have the luxury of, you know, calling an IT guy to come in and, like, fix my rig. I had to learn to fix it myself. And it just wasn't. It was like hell no, 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 no. So, the next thing I did was. I try to just involve myself in conventions. And so that I'd start preparing my portfolio for stuff like that. And I was doing like a lot of gallery work. I was just trying to get a hold of galleries and just try to keep up with painting, I guess. That was my next thing. I was like, well, I don't want to sit in front of a computer all day just mindlessly clicking. No disrespect to any of my animation friends. I wanted to keep creating, so I started painting. And one of my closest friends, she's a really well-known artist now. She was such a huge influence on me. Her name's Sylvia G. She's a really good friend of mine. And just watching how she approached her career. We graduated, too. She was one of the only other females that was a really good friend of mine, huge influence on my art career. But following how she approached her art, it kind of made me want to not necessarily recreate what she was doing, but I saw that she was physical with what she did, and it brought her peace. And I had like this chaos of like just in my mind, just holding down an office and doing somebody's time card, and you know, so at night I would just paint too, and I would do my own thing, and then I realized, you know, I was getting attention for it, you know, and a lot of people were enjoying it, and so I think that's when I started just kind of trying to pursue like a fine art approach to things, because I had to lay my animation pencil to rest, and I had finished doing a 3D animation, so I started doing just my own stuff, you know. It was kind of like being able to do character design, but also just working through that emotional turmoil of just like, I want to be in animation, or I want to be a creative individual, but I'm in an area where I can't express that, so let me just do it through artwork and ship that out, you know, to galleries all across the U.S. And so I think that I use that as my motivation to stay fresh, be motivated, and just keep churning out work, whether it's, you know, if it's painting or if it's character design or anything. I think if you find yourself in a situation where you have to take a different job that isn't what you love, like, you still have to do something on the side to keep you kind of sane as an artist, so.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. That's very true. I like when you talk about, like, you did it for yourself and you did it for peace, like, personal mm-hmm. peace. Mm-hmm. That's so lovely. And do you still, like, you paint a lot today and still do fine art? You're probably so busy right now, huh? But you, like, are you going to get back into it whenever you get time and stuff?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I think that, I think when I'm a little bit older, I want to approach it differently, and I want to go larger, mm-hmm. like larger format. I have it all like sketched out and ready to go. I'll get there.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Okay. So, with you doing your fine art, was that like the key to getting you back into your path to get out to LA and back in animation?
I don't think it was necessarily a key. I think that the, just doing all the artwork kept me busy, mm-hmm. But I also stayed in contact with a lot of friends, and I got involved with the group Girls Drawing Girls at the time, and so I was tabling with them, and they inspired me because I had never had a cadre of females to mm-hmm. to bounce ideas off of. I mean, my social group was a bunch of guys, and they're great. But they think differently, you know, they really do. And women, seeing that all these new girls that came about, you know, at the conventions, this is probably like 2007, 2008, and seeing what they could do and what they were coming out with, like, super inspired me just to keep going for it. Mm-hmm. And 2009, which is funny, I was tabling at WonderCon and ran into an old friend who gave me a heads up on a job. So I applied for it during my time at WonderCon. And I ended up getting a job, and that was at Disney Interactive / Playdom. I had to go back to Wyoming, pack up all my stuff, get out to San Francisco, and then start this job in social gaming. It was an animation, but it was like a foot back in, you know. Yeah. It was like doing, you know, game art, but it was for Disney. So,
yeah,
you know, there's da-da-da, all you need to, you know, do is get a chance and take it.
I actually think it's interesting that social gaming, or just gaming in general, is like slightly a different industry, mm-hmm. because like they still have artists and they still need animation, you mm-hmm. know, and design still happens and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I could see why it's different. I don't know. Personal thing, I guess.
I think the thing about it is like, there's a few of us that were in that studio that had graduated with me at the time, and they had felt, the same way that I did that, you know, back in 2005 when we all got our degrees, they were getting ready to rock and roll. We didn't get the chance, you know. A lot of us had to take side jobs or do something completely outside of animation. It took a couple of years for something else new for creative individuals to get back in and work professionally in it. And Social Games up in Northern California gave people that chance, that the ones that weren't able to make the move down to LA for whatever reason. And so that bubble was like huge at the time, you know. There's a lot of really good people that came out of my school for animation that worked in Social Games, and they were just as happy because they just wanted to create something and create new IP and just be part of that, you know. And, and it was definitely probably one of the best experiences I've ever had. And I'm still in contact with a lot of those artists there because it was such a small group and they were so great.
Like, why was it one of the best times you've ever had working at a place?
Social Games is fun to work at. If anybody gets a chance, they're just, it's, maybe it's a San Francisco thing, I don't know, but it was just like a small family bouncing ideas off of the open air studio and bouncing and collaborating with people just as energetic and open-minded and just willing as you were, and everybody was just, everybody was really, really just in a good mindset at that time. I mean, it was like they were flourishing, everybody was... had a job, everybody was just, you know, it was fun. We were all at the age where we were professional, but we were still having fun, like, you know. it was a lot of people that I had met there were pursuing different things on their off hours, but it was really inspirational. Maybe it was for me because I had finally gotten back in from working at like a, you know, business corporate life and then going back into something creative. Maybe it was that I'm seeing, maybe, but it was fun.
And you did freelance at some point, right? Was that like while you were there?
Let's see. After, Disney, they were, the bubble had burst. And so Disney was letting people go, like just letting us go. Mm-hmm. So, I was up in San Francisco at the time. This was what, 2012, 2013. I had made the decision to move down to LA. I had lost my job at Disney Playdom Interactive. I don't know what they were called, but lost my job there. But I immediately got a job for freelance doing Mattel through a friend. She had put my name through, and so I packed up my stuff and I moved down to LA. That was a decision I made because my family, my extended family, lives here. My mom's family. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know, made the decision, oh, I don't really want to work in Social Games. And I really have always wanted to work in animation. Where's the best place to be? It's down in LA, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I moved down here and decided to just do freelance and try to work on my portfolio. But the thing about it, the freelance that I was getting was more and more, you know, I was doing character design, but I was getting more and more freelance for toy design and character design and toy design, you know? Mm-hmm. I think I did it for like about a year and a half, maybe almost 2 years. And then I was approached for a senior position at Jack's Toys. And so I made the decision to go back, and I knew that it would be different. And it wasn't animation. It wasn't, but it was still a creative field. And by that time, I think I had mostly identified myself professionally as an artist, as a character designer towards that end, because I love to study life. I love to study character and movement and personality and the id. And so I just, you know, toys encompasses a lot of that. And that's one thing that I didn't really realize, you know, it wasn't taught in school, toy design, and you can't really find it anywhere. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You can go to Otis or there, I think there's some toy schools in New York, but anywhere else, there's really not a lot of toy design around here. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, when like the 2D studio had like wrapped up at Disneyland, because they had like where people could watch like the artists make the movies and stuff, so when that kind of like petered out, a few of those guys went into like consumer products or even Disney Design Group, so like that's kind of what happened to those guys. You know, so it's like it definitely makes so much sense how it's like so much the same kind of things that you need to know for character design to design toys, because you are capturing their personality and the essence of the property.
It kind of surprised me how much it was married to it molding my career into toys currently. I feel like I've been in school for the past 2 years.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. It's like somehow I just got myself back into school, and Jax has been like really supportive of that. And I really commend my boss. And I think the thing about it is that I've never had like a female role model who was in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So having her as my current boss, plus another lady there, I'm like looking at them all like starry-eyed or something. I'm just like, holy cow, like these people are forces to be reckoned with. Uh-huh. Like, I've never seen that in the wild, in action, going down, just making things and making it beautiful and getting it done. Learning from that to me is probably more important than anything right now. So it's like learning how to maintain yourself as a woman professionally in anything. So
yeah. So you're a senior designer right now.
Yes.
At Jax.
Mm-hmm.
So those lady role models you have, they're in like upper creative roles then.
Yeah.
So, because mm-hmm. you know, in animation, there's not typically a lot of women in higher creative roles.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see the same thing in toys?
I can't speak for any other place, but at my company currently right now, it's a majority of the toy designers are women, which
mm-hmm.
is really cool. And a lot of the upper directors and VPs are women. And so I feel like I have found a home for myself for now in regards to seeing what, if you want to take it this route, what women are capable of and how they approach business and how they go about pursuing design and getting it done successfully. I think that as students, you know, especially women or girls, they need to really learn how to conduct themselves in a business environment. And whether they like shadow somebody or they need to get some sort of experience to know how to deal with people in general and how to handle yourself and how to handle situations. If you believe in your opinion or if you know something's going to work, how do you say?
Just stand up.
Yeah, how to stand up for yourself and believe in your product or believe in your team. You know, I think a lot of women don't really know how to speak up. And maybe that's just my point of view, but the people that I work with, I consider her my mentee or mentor. I mean, that she's somebody really, really good to watch. I'm just like, holy cow, she said that, you know? Yeah, that's right.
Just
like,
awesome.
Like hype-girling her in the background. Just like, yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
So, because toy design is, you know, way more stable than animation projects sometimes, because animation projects can be like a few weeks to a few years, depending on. So, like, how do you feel about, I'm going to call it the nomad's life, when you have to go from project to project?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, toy design isn't necessarily super stable, but as an artist, it's safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I posted on my Facebook once that I encouraged people to pursue toy design. And I got a lot of people asking, well, how do you do it? And, you know, if anybody is wanting to or willing to learn toy design, which is about the same as character design, you know, you have to know your fundamentals, your character turns and stuff, but you also have to learn heavy control art and illustrator art, and you have to learn how to measure things and learn how to build something. And so I think that just takes experience. So
mm-hmm.
Toys is a really small industry, and they are in lack of really talented artists. And it's a place a lot of people, I encourage for them to try. You know, if they feel like all they want to do is straight visual development, that's fine. But this is a part of the knowledge of the business in whole that I think that a lot of people could benefit from. If anybody's curious at like toy design in general, they should just go to Toys R Us. Honestly,
yes.
Go to the toy aisle, go to the boys aisle or go to the girls aisle, which I know is weird. There should just be a one gender, non-specific, but go to those aisles and go look at those toys and go buy a couple of them, unbox them, pull them apart and just see how they're made. And you know, you really have to consider that artists created that. It came from a piece of paper And they did all the turns, and then we turned it into, you know, a model, and then it was created, you know, it was 3D printing. And it's just, it's a really awesome creative way, but definitely, yeah, check out your toy aisles. And so many creative things are going on there. And it's definitely an avenue to explore, and don't constrict yourself into just, you know, straight character design or straight animation, you know. There's so many other things that you can learn.
So you've worked freelance and in-house full-time. Mm-hmm. So, like, which do you prefer?
Oh, man. Both. I think since I've been in both situations, there's goods and bads to each.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a business-minded personality to do freelance, let's say. If you want to be a freelance artist, you have to conduct yourself as a business and a brand. You need to learn negotiation skills, and you need to learn, some people have their own bookkeepers, but it's expensive. Freelance, you know, You need to learn all those like office job duty skills, you know. I think freelancing is awesome because it's like you get your project, you get it done on your time, then you have all this free time where you can explore different things or, pursue other outside hobbies versus, you know, full-time where it's like you have your guaranteed day-to-day. I think I've done a majority of, like, corporate time, and I've done full-time jobs, and I think for now I prefer full-time. But it changes, you know. Yeah. It can be like, I think it depends on your lifestyle, too. Like, some people will work with them and they have kids, they'd rather be freelance artists, or it's easier for them to work full-time so they have that, you know, that paycheck coming in. It just... But I think since I've done both, that I'll make it work either way. So
yeah, nice. So like you said earlier, you've designed the Disney fairy dolls as well as the recently released, it was like last summer, right?
Yeah.
The Star Darlings. Can you tell us about it? Like, what was it like holding the doll in your hand that you had been drawing for like so long?
First of all, I can't really take complete credit for any of those. Disney Fairy is like the bodies and the face sculpts and everything were already, mm-hmm. you know, existing. And the same with Star Darlings. But I think it was a really cool idea because it's every season, every toy season. I don't know if anybody knows this, but items that you see on the shelves get refreshed. They get new clothes or they get new fashions and hair, face deco. They update them. If you check like in the spring mm-hmm. and then in the fall season, it's like, toys changed.
That's so cool.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, my boss told me to, you know, come up with some designs for Disney fairies, and so I came up with all kinds of concepting things. And the thing about that was that, you know, I really loved a concept. I love concept design. I love it, love it, love it. You just sit there and, you know, you're studying, you're researching, you're finding all these different designers. You're looking at, like, graphic prints, and you're studying fashion design, and... things that I never had the chance to do. Once it's a, you know, whirlwind of just trying to get it into product and then get it out, and then you see it in a box. And then you see all the people that you worked on it with, like a huge team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's surreal because it was yours, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it was weird because I ran around, I had my first fairies box, and I was like excited because this is my first toy that actually became a thing. You know, it was like an actual thing you can hold and hug.
Yeah.
And I was running around. I was asking everybody on my team to sign my box. Sign the box. You know, and everybody's like, why? What is? And I was like, because you were on my team. Like, I want your signature. I want to know that. And they thought it was so strange. And I was like, oh, maybe it's a gaming thing or I don't know. We would sign our game posters. And so I was just like, I'm just paying tribute. Like, you know, we worked on this for so long,
uh-huh.
and now it's this beautiful little product, and she came, you know, and hopefully she, you know, inspires some other little girl, you know, or
mm-hmm.
little boy to want to do something creative. So.
So you have done and continually pursue various avenues of art with character design, toy design, fine art in galleries, vending at conventions, and kids' books, right? Like, you've done kids' books, and you also mentor with women in animation. So, like, how do all these outlets fit together for you? Like, how do you organize, prioritize what you're working on?
I think the thing about going into animation or design or whatever is that you kind of still have to stay hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to keep yourself interested. And you have to also be forever a student. But also, once you reach a certain point, give back what it is that you, your experiences, your life experiences, you know, job experiences, and give back, whether, you know, you feel like you don't have much to offer, you have so much to somebody else to give. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I've always tried to stay as active in the community, and I'd like to know, I like to know who else these people are who inspire me. I want to get to know who they are. And these could be people outside of animation, which I express that everybody should just, you know, check out other artists too, you know, get to know who those guys are. Those people that are, you know, doing that weird, awkward art that you see on Venice Beach, or, you know,
yeah.
Get to know, because you need to find inspiration from other things other than another artist who is awesome in animation, whose art looks like somebody else's, you know. It's, mm-hmm. You need to look beyond that scope and just stay hungry, learn, visualize, experience, travel, and then incorporate that into your art and then give that back. And hopefully that, whatever it is, your story, your painting, or your drawing comes up, will inspire somebody else. So I'm totally somebody who kind of takes it in a different way, where it's like, take that artsy path, you know,
mm-hmm.
take the super artsy path. Don't just do the conventional art.
It's like finding your voice and sharing it.
Yeah. Finding your voice, but going about it by going outside of the bubble, you know, the little Hollywood bubble. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, all I want to do is just draw like this person. And it's like, okay, well, I'm sure that person was wanting to draw like this person or something. And
mm-hmm.
It's like, don't just study the same masters, or don't just study, but study as many different and weird and crazy individuals as you can, like, that are outside of animation, because that's only going to make your art better.
Yeah.
I think it's going to stand out, you know?
Yeah. Something that really inspires me in terms of, like, looking outside the Hollywood bubble, was the time when Ivan Earle, like, he made a book where he rode his bike from the West Coast to the East Coast, and he, you know, painted what he saw along the way.
Yeah.
And then he had a gallery showing out there and made a book and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I just, like, and his work looks like no one else's, you know? And I find so much truth in what you're saying.
I'm trying to find inspiration from the non-animation artists, you know,
yeah.
That are just, you know, like wildlife artists or Southwestern artists or just crazy individuals.
Yeah. So through your whole journey as an artist so far, like, do you have any personal philosophies for thriving in art?
Approaching everything with a childlike wonder.
I love that so much.
Asking a lot of questions, investigating, seeing how things work and how they move. Don't base everything off of your own opinion. You know, learn the truth about things and people, especially. You don't know what's going on with that other person. Say you have somebody at work or a friend and you don't know, you know. There's always two sides to every story. I think the thing about me is just I'm very curious. How is that made? You know, like that TV show, how it's made. It's kind of like my thing. If art and design and animation are your passions and love, you're going to pursue it regardless of what road you have to take. If that's your true love, you know, you're going to find ways to just make it work or make it happen or stay involved or try to just be inspired by the mundane. There's always something good to see.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. You've mentioned it a couple of times today about purpose and mission.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk more about that? Like, was it when you were a child that you felt like you had a mission in life?
Oh, I think I was just attracted to the idea of designing and making things pretty and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I'm learning about myself more that I'm older, like getting older and working in toy design, was like, not only did I want to paint and learn, you know, color schemes and mood and design and composition, but working with toys, I'm learning more that I'm more curious about the more hands-on things, how things work, how things are created, how they fit together, fashion design, like how things are sewn together and how things are buffled and put together and made and created. I think it's I don't know if that's because my dad's like a woods craftsman, and I grew up in his wood shop with him. You know, he's always at a skill saw, mm-hmm. so I got to build things with him. But like, I'm curious to see how things are being created, more like that, like imagineering kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think that's like the next phase of my art career or just path, is just the idea of how to inspire things and incorporate that into a product or a toy that's going to inspire somebody. So I think that as an artist, don't constrict yourself into thinking that I just want to be an animator and that's it. You know, if you box yourself into that idea, you're not going to allow yourself to grow as a person.
Very nice. Do you have any advice for young women wanting to get into the industry?
I mean, you need to know your basics and who your basic, like your basic teachers are. Get outside yourself and stop trying to think that you're socially awkward. I mean, just be brave, because you're going to have to be brave anyways, and you're going to have to conduct yourself as a professional person. So it starts from day one. So the people around you are going to be people that you work with and work for, or they may work for you. So you really have to just be friendly with everybody. And if you feel like that person isn't a good person, don't pay them no mind and just go your own way. Definitely find those classes that are outside of school. Take other classes. Take other things other than art, you know. Take some pottery classes. Take some cooking classes, electronics classes. Learn how to put things together. I don't know. Just find those other creative outlets, too, not just draw. That's one thing. Don't just draw every day. Create something every day, mm-hmm. you know? It doesn't have to be just a piece of paper. Go and sew something. Go fix your tires. Go learn how to change your oil.
Yeah. Follow your curiosity.
Yeah, definitely. But also learn how to do stuff for yourself.
I have no idea how to change a tire, so...
Well, let's go out and I'll show you.
No, no, not today. I should, though. Where can our listeners find out about you?
They can go to my personal website, which is sherrydelorme.com. Or they can follow me on my Instagram at sherrylynndelorme. And I think I have a Tumblr, too. I think it's all Sherry DeLorme.
Yeah. I'm not that. Is it all Sherry Lynn DeLorme or
no,
Sherry
just
DeLorme?
No, just my Instagram, Sherry Lynn DeLorme.
Okay, so. And that's Lynn with two N's.
Yeah, Sherry LYNN DeLorme. Yeah.
Cool. And we'll have links in the show notes to all these places as well. Well, thank you so much, Sherry, for coming on the show and sharing your experience. You have such thoughtful answers.
Oh, thanks. Thank you, Cassie. Thanks for having me. Thank you for this opportunity. I appreciate it.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider leaving a review on iTunes. It helps us reach and share these stories with a wider audience. Want to chat? We're on Twitter at Ink, the letter N, Paint Girls, on Facebook at Ink and Paint Girls Podcast, or email us at inkandpaintgirlspodcast@gmail.com. The Ink and Paint Girls Podcast is brought to you by me, creator and host Cassie Soliday, and produced by Val Patrone in sunny Burbank, California. Music composed by TV's Kyle. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Girls Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.